Minerva Radio. Less mainstream, more music.
Greetings from me, Mike Brocken, and a warm welcome to Brock and Roll. For those uninitiated, Brock and Roll is a kind of alternative history of popular music via the playing of rare and or hard to find recordings, many of which actually are vinyl. So if you hear a few clicks and pops, don't worry about it. So far in this mini-series, we've discussed record labels Island, Vertigo and Elektra, and I now want to move on part one of a consideration of the Decca Record Company via a look at their interesting DRAM subsidiary. But first, let's listen to the very first DRAM single release, Beverly and the Randy Newman song, Happy New Year. Yes, I like that. That's a little cracker, I think. DRAM single DM101 from 1966. That's Beverly Kutner, as her name was, known as Beverly, really, and Randy Newman's Happy New Year. Great song, I think. Beverly, for a while at least, was the lead singer of the Levee Breakers, a great name for a good blues band, obviously, you know, a moderately popular group in the folk and blues clubs of London. Amongst her chums at that time, apparently, were Donovan, Bert Jansch and Paul Simon. Beverly was only 17 when she was signed to a production company called New Breed, and that was Denny Cordell's company. You might know that name as a very good mid-60s producer. And she recorded with Denny Cordell an album's worth of material, backed by the talents of Nicky Hopkins, John Paul Jones And, yeah, you've guessed it, Jimmy Page. And Happy New Year was selected as DRAM's first release. The following year, actually, Paul Simon picked Beverly to play the Monterey Pop Festival, and she did play. When I look at it, the reviews and things, you can never find a review of her, but she did play. Maybe just, you know, people didn't notice, really. And she later married John Martin and released albums with him for a couple of years. But Happy New Year, of course, didn't trouble the chart compilers of the day, unfortunately. But I think it's a great little starter for us, DM101. Perhaps ineptly, but perhaps not, DRAM placed pop, progressive and experimental artists together. And the singles releases weren't, I'll talk about sound in a minute really, but they weren't really expertly done, mostly being mono. But they did create an interest in miscellany of sound. Some releases were successful, others like Beverly's were not. This one was a hit. It's another Denny Cordell production and it comes from The Move.
People all in line, what's making them look at me? Can't imagine that their minds are thinking the same as me. I can hear the grass grow, I can hear the grass grow. I see rainbows in the evening. My head's attracted to a magnetic wave of sound. Streets of colored circles making their way around. I can hear the grass grow. I can hear the grass grow. I see rainbows in the evening. Can't seem to cause the loudest sound.
I love The Move. I've always liked them. I loved them when I was a kid. That's DM117. It was released in December 1966. I Can Hear the Grass Grow. A well-deserved top five pop hit for The Move. At the time of the formation in 66, you probably know this, but they were all in various Brummy beat groups. Roy Wood was with Mike Sheridan's Lot, one of the top bands in Birmingham at the time. Trevor Burton was with Danny King's Mayfair set. And Carl Wayne, Ace Kefford and Bev Bevan were with Carl Wayne and the Vikings. They were all really major bands in Birmingham at that time, and they decided to pool their resources on quite a forward-thinking project for them, and the result was the most excellent Move. I think they're very underrated, even to this day. One of the first groups, too, to use that auto-destruct stage act you know, the one that The Who does and Hendrix does and breaks their instruments. Well, The Move started that, really, I think, breaking up tellies on stage at one stage. The first single also, Night of Fear, was a chart hit too for DRAM, by the way. Anyway, this DRAM thing, what do we make of that? Well, DRAM Records was an odd project for the Decca Record Company. In the 1960s, recording engineers at Decca experimented with ways of improving stereo. They created a technique that they named the Decca Panoramic Sound. The term DRAMic was created as an abbreviation of it, so it was just a kind of shorthand, really. And the new concept allowed for more space between the instruments, it said, rendering these sounds softer to the ear. Well, they did do that. They did do that. The problem with early stereo recordings in popular music was that they had technical limitations, really, because they were made on professional four-track reel-to-reel recorders, which were considered the state-of-the-art until 1967, but they could produce imbalanced tracks. And you can still note this if you're ever kind of dubbing something off a CD, which is a recording of a 60 thing. You notice that, you know, in your headphones, it's not working properly, really. So Decca initially conceived DRAM Records as an outlet for DRAMic sound recordings. And this DRAMic sound was supposed to create recordings that had more natural stereo spread across the speakers. It didn't really. It was artificial because the basic difference was, instead of overdubbing and mixing four individual mono tracks from a four-track recorder, the Decca recording engineers used a pair of four-track machines to layer multiple two-channel recordings. So it was just doubling up, really, in many respects. But it was a new concept. It was allowing additional tracks to work in there, and it allowed the engineer to place instruments more easily in a different position, which fitted in the stereo field, so to speak. But it didn't apply, mostly anyway, to single releases, which more often than not were still quickie sessions and released in mono to be heard on the radio. And of course, by 66, pirate radio was very, very important as well. And actually, the DRAMic sound concept, DRAM issued a series of six easy listening orchestral pop albums to begin with. And they all included the word night in the title, Strings in the Night, or Brass in the Night. And artists in that sort of series, the orchestral leaders, included people like Tony Osborne and Peter Knight, actually. So you've got this interesting development. Peter Knight actually eventually leads the orchestra alongside the Moody's, who wrote a track called Nights in White Satin, and that was scheduled for release. But we'll talk about that in a little while. Meanwhile, let's have another DRAM single that didn't chart this time, but has subsequently become an absolutely iconic recording. The 23rd Turnoff were named after the East Lancashire exit on what was the enlarging M6 motorway at the time. 23rd one goes to Liverpool along the East Lancs. And the group had previously recorded as the Kirbys after their origin in Liverpool's Overspill town. And they'd scored hits abroad, most notably in Finland, actually, but nothing happened for them in the UK. This song, Michelangelo, was DRAM DM150, released in 1967, and it sadly flopped, but latterly has been regarded as a psychedelic masterpiece. Here it is.
Michelangelo.
fantastic, fantastic 23rd turn off Michelangelo. Not spelled correctly, it's two words, Michelangelo, they've spelt it as rather than the one. Doesn't matter. Written by band leader Jimmy Campbell, who went on to record three really interesting solo albums after that. Just a brilliant thing, and that was released on DRAM as well. Procol Harum are interesting too, as far as DRAM are concerned. They burst into the popular music charts with their 1967 debut, DRAM, number one hit single as well, A Whiter Shade of Pale, didn't they? It was a surreal poem by a non-playing band member. They had a non-playing band member, lyricist and poet Keith Reid. They'd previously been members of the Paramounts and had cut six singles for Parlophone, with one of them, a cover of the Coasters' Poison Ivy, was being a minor hit. They toured with the Beatles as well during that time. A Whiter Shade of Pale was DRAM's single number 126. But interestingly, by the time of the group's first album, their management company, Straight Ahead Productions, who also handled the move, had completed a deal with EMI, which had their material released on the reintroduced Regal Zonophone label. So by the time the album came out, they were on Regal Zonophone. Here's a track on that first album. I really rate it very highly. It's kind of a little bit ignored these days. This is Procol Harum, and She Wandered Through the Garden Fence.
She wandered through the garden fence, said I've bought a great expense, a potion guaranteed to bring relief from all your suffering. Though I said you don't exist, she grasped me firmly by the wrist, threw me down upon my back, strapped me to a torture rack, and without
time since that's been on the radio, I can tell you, from the first Procol Harum album, and that she wandered through the garden fence. Although the album was out on Regal Zonophone at that stage, they were a DRAM band to begin with. And you can't help thinking, I was just talking with Ian, my producer, about this, and how the separation on that track of the different instruments is really good. And it's obviously learnt a lot from that DRAM sound idea of recording with multiple tracks and then splitting them up into an appropriate phase. And the drumming on it sounds like the drummer's in a booth, whether he was or not. He may not have been at that stage, but certainly people are learning on the hoof by this stage, aren't they, with all of this sound stuff. Really interesting stuff. Okay, Stephen Giorgio was heard performing at Hammersmith College by none other than ex-Springfield Mike Hurst. Mike had become a record producer by the mid-1960s, and Hurst was sufficiently impressed to organise and finance a recording session, which resulted in Cat Stevens's I Love My Dog. Giorgio was quickly signed by Decca's Tony Hall, who changed his name to Cat Stevens, and it was Stevens rather than Beverly who was advertised as the first act on DRAM, oddly enough. Pirate radio, in this case, really helped promote Cat Stevens' I Love My Dog. I wonder whether that was free or whether anybody was receiving envelopes here and there. We never know, do we? And the single made it into the top 30, just about, peaking only at 28. But let's hear it. I loved this when I was a kid. Absolutely loved it. DM 102, Cat Stevens, and I Love My Dog.
As much as I love you, but you may think my dog will always come through. All he asks from me is the food to give him strength. All he ever needs is love, and that he knows he'll get. So I love my dog as much as I love you, but you may think my dog will always come through. All the pay I need comes a shining through his eyes. I don't need no cold water to make me realize that I love my dog as much as I love you. But you may fail, my dog will always come through. As much as I love you, but you may think my dog will always come through.
Interesting lyrics on that too. Oh, that's the most excellent pop song, I think. Fantastic. I loved it when I was a kid. Even though it only reached 28, I seem to remember hearing it quite a lot, actually. I Love My Dog, which launched the first phase of Cat Stevens' amazing career. Good B-side too, Portobello Road. You might know that one if you're a Cat fan. Matthew and Son followed soon after, and that reached number two. And his career was really underway by that stage. I think he probably got really fed up with all the orchestrations myself. But there we go. That's another story for another day, isn't it? There was a little group called Warm Sounds. They also achieved some small chart success via their first DRAM single, Birds and Bees, which reached number 27 during the summer of 67. It was DM 120, and it actually reached number one on the Pirate Radio London Top 40. And it was the only single to do that and not make the UK top 20 at the time, the official chart. They were effectively a duo, Barry Husband and Denver Gerard. I didn't know anybody was called Denver in the 90s. That's a great name, isn't it? And they were they never really scaled the dizzy heights of chart success again. Did produce a few things, but they were a good example of that British harmony pop with a tinge of kind of acid-soaked weirdness, really. So this is Warm Sounds and Birds and Bees.
There you are, in the corner. No, it's no use you hiding from me, 'cause I know that you want me. It's easily plain to see. What's the difference? You're sitting on the cold hard floor. So I wish you'd decide to come here by my side for a kiss and a cuddle with me. Don't be afraid, come with me please. That's all there is to the birds and the bees. Don't be afraid, come with me please. That's all there is to the birds and the bees.
Sorry dear, I can see you by the twinkle that shines in your eyes. No, I don't think it's starlight. It's your passion for me that I spy.
Please remember, my words are not the same old line. When I ask you to blaze in the heat and the haze by my side on this beautiful day. Look at the sky, look at the trees. That's all there is to the birds and the bees. Look at the sky, look at the trees. That's all there is to the birds and the bees.
It's a crack. I think that's really good. It's a crack of that. A minor hit for DRAM and a minor hit for Warm Sounds, Birds and Bees. You might remember it if you're old enough. I remember liking it quite a lot on the radio, and I think it might have been one of those tracks that Kenny Everett may have played quite a lot on his daytime shows at the weekend. Anyway, let's go a bit local now. Not far from here, Time Box. Time Box were formed in Southport in 1966. And they had two unsuccessful Piccadilly singles and also a flop on DRAM. And they preceded a very, very groovy take on the Four Seasons US hit, Beggin'. And it got into the lower reaches of the British charts by Time Box in 1968. It peaked only at 38, so technically you might describe it as a miss, in actual fact, in those days. But it was really, really popular as an early DJ dance track. So you might know this in spite of its relative failure chart-wise. It's DM 194, Time Box and Beggin'.
Put your loving hand out, baby. I'm begging. Begging you, put your loving hand out, baby. Yeah, begging you, put your loving
what used to be. Shadows of my life hanging over me. Help me spin on the globe. Would even stand the devil's chance to rule my soul. Yeah, begging, begging you. Put your loving hand down, baby.
Yeah, begging.
I'm begging you. Put your loving hand down, baby. I tried so hard.
Do you like that? Do you like that one? We've been sort of jigging around the studio here. Fantastic, that Time Box from Southport, actually. I'm begging. And we'll hear another Time Box DRAM classic before we close as well. Meanwhile, one of the biggest hits for DRAM came during that year of 1968 via the good offices of a London band called Honeybus. Now, Honeybus were formed by Peter Dello and Ray Kane, and mostly as a vehicle for their songwriting, I think it was songwriters primarily. It was a common thing in the UK pop scene of the late 60s to 70s, being a songwriter and just naming a band to play your stuff, so to speak. Now, their DRAM 45 DM131 was a debut, and it was called Delighted to See You. It sank without trace, not a trace of it. And the second, Do I Still Figure in Your Life, also evaded chart success, but became a very important part of Joe Cocker's repertoire at the time. But third time lucky, Dello's I Can't Let Maggie Go, which was DM182, reached number 8 in 1968. Especially, perhaps, you might remember this, because Nimble Bread used it on an advert. Nothing substantial followed apart from this one, though, which I think is minus Peter Dello, but it is a great example of a very late 60s British psych pop thing. Now, I don't even know if it was ever released as a single at the time, but it kind of slipped out at some stage and I got to hear it in the mid-1970s. The track I'm talking about is called Under the Silent Tree, and I just think it's just a brilliant example of British sort of post-psychedelic pop. Take a listen to this by Honeybus.
Silence.
That's a kind of a lost Honeybus track from their post I Can't Let Maggie Go period called Under the Silent Tree. I think they were minus Pete Dello, but that's a great song, isn't it? That's how you write good pop, good loud pop, I think. Another almost but not quite lost DRAM track from the very late 60s comes from Denny Lane's String Band. Short-lived but very interesting outfit. Lane had departed the Moody Blues in 67 and he signed a two-single deal with DRAM. He had Viv Prince on drums and some suggest Trevor Burton with him as well. And they both became kind of ad hoc members of this ad hoc group, the String Band, really. DM-122 was a classic piece of English psychedelia, really. But it might have come out a little bit late, possibly, and it failed to chart when it was first released in 67. It was then reissued in 69 and received, as I remember, lots of radio on airplay, but failed to chart yet again. And it was only in 1972, when ex-zombie Colin Blunstone covered it, that the song deservedly became a hit. But this is the original, the Denny Lane String Band, and Say You Don't Mind.
I realize that I've been in your eyes some kind of fool. I do what I did, stupid fish, I drank the pool. I've been doing some dying, now I'm doing some trying. They'll say you don't mind, let me off this mind. Went clean into a scene where my dreams were getting bad. I've been doing some wild, now I'm doing some fine. Say you don't mind, let me up this time. Do you want to lie? Suffered inside. Better times, that's bad. It's a sign to get back and think up some better lines. I've been doing some growing, and I'm scared of you going. So lay down mind, you don't mind, let me up this time. Let me up this time.
Great, great. That's the original. I mean, we all know the Colin Blunstone one, big hit in the early 1970s for the ex-zombie. But that's the original, DM-122. Classic piece of English psychedelia, that, and the Denny Lane String Band, the short-lived Denny Lane String Band, and Say You Don't Mind. Great stuff, that. Really like. I'd love to come across an original copy of the sort of 67 issue, you know, just in a junk shop somewhere. It'd be really good to see. I don't think I ever have done. A similar DRAM miss took place in 67 when London singer-songwriter Bill Fay released, I think, his only DRAM single, Some Good Advice. incredibly rare now, really, really rare. It's probably one of the rarest records we're playing today, actually. And Faye actually stayed with DRAM, however. They regarded it as an interesting songwriter, and I think he might have written a few tracks for other people at the time. But very original work, and it spanned a few years, actually, a single and two albums, as far as I can tell, right into the mid to late 1970s. But he didn't have any commercial success as such. Now, the original A-side, Some Good Advice, do you know what? I heard it, and I really think it's like not an A-side, it's a B-side. I always preferred the B-side of this single. So I'm going to play it for you. The B-side of Bill Fay's only single for DRAM, DM143, this is Scream in the Ears.
Sherry to somebody else, I've got nothing to say. Said my wife's in the bedroom with everyone else, but I don't want to play. Will you stop asking me who I am? Go and find someone else to tell your jokes to. What a great party this is. Still moan, I got nothing but screams in my ears. And I've just put a cigarette out. No thanks, I don't want another beer. Will you stop asking me who I am? Go and find someone else to tell your jokes to. What a great party this is. Budgerigar committed suicide. But it was you. I saw you put that gin in its border. I was standing by your side. Will you stop asking me who I am? Go and find someone else to tell your jokes to. What a great party this is.
That's a rare one, isn't it? That's Bill Fay, DRAM singer-songwriter Bill Fay. One of those terrible parties we've all been to, you know. Can you imagine how terrible they were in the music industry in the mid-1960s as well, especially if you were like 20? Oh, terrible, terrible times. Scream in the Ears. And that was the B-side of his one and only DRAM single, Some Good Advice, which is a good track, but I prefer that B-side, I must say. Okay, something quite different from Bill Fay now. The Flirtations. Oh, they're fantastic. Anyway, they were an African-American trio from New York City who came to London from New York in about late 67 or 68, I think. And they were signed by two ex-Merseybeat musicians, Wayne Bickerton and Tony Waddington. Wayne and Tony had been members of Lee Curtis and the All-Stars, who were a massive band on the live circuits in West Germany, and also mutated into the Pete Best Four once Lee Curtis left that band in 62 or 63, I think it was. They became producers at Decca in 65 to 66, late 65, I think it was, and the Flirtations were a really excellent outfit, but their singles tended to stall when they were released, owing perhaps, maybe, I think, to a lack of radio play, and also because the success of Motown artists in the UK at this stage, maybe there was a consideration that the Flirtations were a little bit inauthentic, possibly, but I thought they were great. They did have a hit in the US, and also Tom Jones successfully covered one of their ballads, I Can't Stop Loving You, which was a big hit for him in American charts. And they were, or they did become, a popular act on British TV. In the early 1970s, they regularly appeared with Cliff on his early 70s TV shows. But nothing, and I repeat, simply nothing, accounts for the failure of this unbelievable classic Bickerton and Waddington song released on DRAM in 1968. Nothing but a heart. Isn't that just great? I love that. Absolutely lovely. And rightly picked up by the Northern Soul DJs of the early mid-1970s up in Wigan and Blackpool. Fantastic stuff. Nothing but a heartache by the Flirtations. Now regarded as a Northern Soul classic, actually. I got to know Wayne a little bit, actually. He was head of the PRS when I was working at the Institute of Popular Music at Liverpool University. Wayne Bickerton, of course, I'm talking about. And we spent some good moments together in my room. When he'd go into the Institute of Popular Music, he felt a little bit out of water, you know, because he was just a local lad. I think he was born in Rhyl, actually, but he was a Liverpool guy, really. And so once he heard my accent and the fact that I knew his ex-manager, Joe Flannery, we'd spend a bit of time together while he was discussing issues about academic stuff in popular music. But he's a good guy, really good guy. And I just love that. I absolutely love Nothing But a Heartache. Let's have now another less successful DRAM single, and in terms of Cat Stevens' career, one that didn't set the charts alight for interesting reasons, at least when he was with DRAM. It's a cracker, though. Cat had established himself as a formidable songwriter in the pop field by 1968, not only via singing his own material, which was, you know, we must remember, that's still quite unusual by the 60s as far as the pop charts were concerned, but also through other artists covering his songs. For example, P.P.R. Arnold successfully covered The First Cut Is the Deepest. Rod Stewart later cut it as well, didn't he? Whereas the Tremolos, massive success in covering Here Comes My Baby. I think it might have been a number one, actually. But in February 1968, Cat contracted TB, and he spent the best part of that year recuperating. So his unavailability to promote subsequent single releases inevitably negatively affected their success, despite great quality coming out. Here's a good example of this. This is from 1968, DRAM DM178, and Cat Stevens' Lovely City. It's actually one of my favourite DRAM Cat Stevens releases. I loved it, and I loved it at the time. It did get a lot of airplay, but there was nobody to follow it up. You know, he wasn't around, literally. And it took another 18 months before Cat Stevens effectively reappeared on the UK singles chart, by which time he'd signed with Island Records. He became more of an acoustic singer-songwriter, which was a very important thing by the late 60s, wanting to be a, quote, singer-songwriter. And, of course, it didn't have the perhaps at times overblown orchestrations provided by Mike Hurst. So 1970's Lady Dar Bumville went top 10 as soon as he reappeared, really, during the summer of that year. And the rest, as they say, is history. Okay, I promised you another track from Southport's Time Box, so let's return to that now with another splendid DRAM single and yet another flop. The follow-up to Beggin' was Girl Don't Make Me Wait, also released in 68, and it's a decent enough but unremarkable crack at the charts. But on the B-side of DM219 was this little cracker, Gone Is the Sad Man.
And sing with birds away.
another DRAM B-side for you there. Time Box, Southport band Time Box, and Gone is the Sad Man. Well, we've just got time for one of DRAM's great album-orientated success stories. And by the time the aforementioned Denny Lane had left the Moody's, the Moody Blues, that is, in 1967, the band were on the slide. Alongside Lane, bass player Clint Warwick quit the business altogether, and the band's two new members were John Lodge and Justin Hayward, and they were trying to think about a new direction, really. But even their new manager as well, who was Brian Epstein for a while, actually failed to arrest the lack of hits. However, the orchestral DRAMic idea that we'd mentioned earlier on in the show affected the band, and it was that the band and an orchestra was proposed anyway that they would record together, possibly for a budget release. But what finally materialised was that the orchestra passages were sort of in between, slotted around the album, and the Moody's wrote their own material. So we had an interesting thing that's linked to this DRAMic sound, orchestral middle-of-the-road kind of sound that the Moody's were able to get engaged with. And the significance of the album should not be underrated, really, that very first album. Also, the band's Mellotron accentuated their sound too. And the Moody's were on the way. Days of Future Past rescued their careers effectively. And it was Peter Knight, who was the band leader, the orchestra leader, I should say, that helped that process. In Search of the Lost Chord was their next conceptual sound recording. Out went the orchestra and they played all the instruments featured themselves. And it began like this. And I'll see you very soon.
Be it sight, sound, smell or touch, there's something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak with roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard and to use them to help us.